All right, so this is a shear. Yaakov Avinu never died. So, which is, I guess, self-explanatory in its own right.
Okay.
I don't know if I have to really much have to say onto that obvious point. But there's a Gemara in Tainus, Hayim Beis. It was interesting. Aaron Zimmer was giving a shear on this thing, and then Rabbi Sachs, you know, developed and we discussed it out. So I'm sharing some of this, this shear out to you guys. Yaakov Avinu never died. Okay, so the Gemara goes as follows: Rav Nachman, Rav Yitzchak, have Yasve Besudasa. Rav Nachman and Rav Yitzchak are dying together. Amar Le Rav Nachman, Rav Yitzchak, Le Amar Milsa. Say some Torah. Word of Torah. I mean, just from that point alone is that. Let's just pause on that one point. There's a general principle. Pirkei Avos says that, you know, certainly a shloshah, the three that eat and do not discuss any Torah at it, is kaziv chemesim, is like the offerings of idolatry. What is that, a basic idea? You know, let's say a person is a big meal. Let's say there's a big hunt of meal. You got 20 people and they're having, you know, course after course. And the course and the meal begins with discussion of the Mets and ends with the Yankees new stadium and conversations of similar popular culture issues in the middle, but not one word of Torah is discussed. Why would Pirkei Avos call that an idolatrous feast?
The whole meal is just catering to its appetites.
So that's just instinctual. Why is it idolatrous? I mean, that's going a step further. And they quote the pasuk from Yeshaya: "Ki kol shulchanos." Because all their tables are filled with vomit and excrement without any space. Now one shot is that because they're having, they're just gorging themselves, they're just, it's like a Roman feast. This is the, now we're talking about the people of Ephraim. Okay, they're just, you know, just instinctually, but it's just like a disgusting vomit fest. One shot. But why is that, you know, that's pretty harsh here. There's, you know, why is that, you know, that's if you're having a drunken Roman feast, that's a pasuk is appropriate. Well, they're here, they're just eating, and they're not, nobody's drunk. Zivche Mason, the offerings to the dead. What do you guys got to say? Well, the reverse, Pirkei Avos gives you reverse. And if people do discuss, Shloshach, three that discuss and they have terror thing, they call it Shulchan Hashem. The Pasuk in Yechezkel says, Zeh Shulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. Referring to the Mizbeach. So your table is like a Mizbeach. As a property of the Mizbeach. I think we discussed this going back maybe, I don't know, a year or so. I don't know exactly what we said. What's the basic idea? The question is, why is Pirkei Avos so harsh in condemning, let's say, three people? Like the idea of shlosh shachem means it's not a snack. It's an established, sit down, formal, significant meal. Okay. And what the person does at that point, they talk no Torah. So that they say is kizivche mason, literally the offerings to the dead.
And so it's like a vodazar.
Right, so has an aspect of a vodazar. An aspect of a vodazar.
They
quote the pasuk from Yeshaya, talks about the people of Ephraim, that they're, you know, they're eating and drinking to the extent that their tables are filled with vomit and excretion without any room, which is again a very I don't think they literally had that. Again, that's obviously an exaggeration of the Navi, but trying to convey a certain point. What's the question? What's the basic idea there? Because here we have that our two Amoraim, Rav Nachman and Yitzchak, in the middle of the meal, they're asking, so, new, start us off with some, start off with some Torah. So, you know, it's important aside.
I guess Torah writing is almost like compared on the same level in terms of a person's, like, existence or, like, survival.
Okay.
Right? Like a person sitting down to eat. But, like, it seems like it's like they're sitting down for, like, probably bread and want, like, a whole meal.
Yeah, whole meal, yeah.
Right, it's not just, like, a grape or anything like that. It's, like, a whole actual meal. So
sure.
They need it to, like, sustain themselves. So, to, like, Torah, a person needs that to sustain themselves as well.
Certainly true. But it's not... Okay, so all right, so therefore, and so let's say they have this meal and they don't talk Torah. So why is it so bad?
Because like their soul, so to speak, won't be able, like they can't survive, and they won't.
Doesn't say that they don't talk Torah elsewhere. It's just that when they had a meal, they didn't. You know, I mean, it doesn't mean that they never learn ever. Let's don't condemn the people, you know, overly. You know, I mean, it's just that they're not using this time to learn, you know. Gary?
Nah, I'm really not sure.
But the Mishnah says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shlosh Ish'achlo al Shulchan Echad, three that eat around one table. Lo Amru Allah of Divrei Torah, they don't speak upon it words of Torah. Ki'ilu achlu mizivchei meisim, if they ate of the offerings to the dead. Shne'amar, ki kol shulchanos mal'u ki tso b'li makum, for all their tables are filled with vomit and excrement without any space. Ala shlosh achlu al shulchan echav amru ala av divrei Torah, but three that eat on one table and they eat and they speak on it words of Torah, as if they eat from tables shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of the Holy One Blessed Be'i. Shne'amar, v'yedaber Eli, and Hashem said to me, Zeh Shulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. This is the table which is before Hashem. So, which is interesting is that it's, there's an analogy to what is the object of the two chazals? What are they all centering around? The shulchan, right? Shlosh achlu al shulchan echad. Three that eat around one table. Should say shlosh achlu, because and the pasuk and they both and the pasuk are both talking about a different kind of shulchan. They're two different kinds of tables, right? So. So with the shulchan of let's take the positive one. Let's say they do discuss Torah. So now that let's analyze the other one. Is it really true that the person's shulchan is like shulchan Hashem, the mizbeach? How is that true? Let's take the easier side first.
They say Mizbeach LaShem, they mean as if someone is sacrificing at the Mizbeach in the Mikdash.
Yes. They're eating out of the Shulchan of Hashem, as it were. Ki'ilu.
I guess on a superficial level, when you're at the Mizbeach and you're eating the korban, right there we eat the korban.
Some korbanos, yes.
So you are getting this instinctual gratification, but at the same time you're also channeling your energy towards God. Some respect.
Well, that's really the any case, but it's more than that. it makes your achila an avoda itself. Because part of the idea of korbanos is that the korban has to be a nefal, to be consumed. So your consumption with the right intent is right. Part of the actual avoda itself.
Right, so similarly here too, you seem to be qualifying your achila.
Right.
It's not an achila gasa, an achila filling your gut, but it's right. An achila which is tied to the same idea, the Hashem, to the top of the Torah.
Right, so it's a the Shulchan seems to be the platform. What's a Shulchan? The Shulchan is a platform where it has a distinctive element that where like a conference table, important things are discussed. So your platform could be your platform and of Achila can be of two different. There are two extremes here. Either it could be a tool of Avoda, which is really versus a tool of anti-avoda. In other words, apparently what Rabbi Shimon is arguing, it's not a neutrality. There's never a neutrality here. If a guy, it has to be, if you're just eating and there's a gorging going on, and it's not instrumental to anything, man is, apparently he's saying, is designed as such that he's going to have a false definition of the tov. That meal has a meaning to. Food is there so we can, friends get together and talk about the mess. That's the good of life. In other words, what you do on your shulchan when you have a significant gathering is what you're really saying about what the good of life is. So it's really a measurement, sort of like a shear in what the person says is significant. Now, the word zivche mesim I think is interesting. Offerings to the dead. It's sort of like pointless. You know, not only is it false, but it's false and futile. I mean, it has a mason means like you're offering to a being that has no existence whatsoever, completely an act of futility. Mm-hmm. I think that's what he's Shimon is driving at. All right, I think we analyzed it even further in our previous year. Go online, you can check it out. But anyway, so going back to our case, so Rav Nachman says to Rav Yitzchak, "No, say an idea." All right, so. He said like this, my Rebbe Rav Yochanan said, Yaakov in a lo meis. Yaakov, our forefather, never died. So apparently our good friend Rav Nachman was not satisfied with that. So he says, the bichti saftu sabdine v'chantu chantaya v'kevru kivraya. Do they not eulogize him, embalm him, bury him for nothing? You're saying he never died. If you look at the open sukkim in the end of Bereishis, is that Yaakov Inu got a state funeral, right? Yosef had him embalmed. He was cried for for 70 days, and then he was buried with a major gathering. So he says, Amar Lei, Mikra Ni Deresh. I'm giving a drash. Okay, so I'm giving Shanem Mar says in Yirmiyahu. Vata alti ra'avdi Yaakov nu Mashem, v'alti chaz Yisrael, hirini moshiacha merchok, v'ezracha mi'erz shavim. Oh Yaakov, my servant, says Hashem, don't be dismayed, Yisrael, don't be afraid, Yaakov, and don't be dismayed, Yisrael, for behold, I will save you from afar, and your children from the land of captivity. Ma keshu lazaro, he is compared to his descendants. Ma zaro b'chaim, just as his descendants are living, so too he is living. Okay, that's when you read that, that's completely incomprehensible. So Rashi then adds to that, gives a little hint. He says, "Kishivienu bagola," when you will bring them in from the exile, "Kadeshi legal as banav leinav," Hashem will bring Yaakov from the exile to redeem his children for his eyes. Kemosh Matzim of Mitzrayim, as we saw by Egypt, is by the Yamsuf, Vayar Yisrael, Sliyadag, Lashar, Swami Yerazam, Yamin of Hashem, Moshe Avda. Who was Vayar Yisrael? Who's one who saw? Flame shot is what? The Jewish people. What is this? Darshina? Yisrael Sava. Yisrael, the grandfather, i.e., Yaakov Avinu. He's the one that saw the Egyptians dead at Yamsuf and Yamin of Hashem, Moshe Avda. Okay? Alright, so not his children. Based on the drash.
Okay, so what are the questions here? And there are questions. Go ahead. Any questions? Or is it clear?
But wasn't it that the, like, all the names, like, weren't, like, all the Jews witnesses of what happened?
Right, because the plain reading of the pasuk is the Jews are there, they get saved by the splitting of the Yom Suf, and by Yar Yisrael, so Yad Gdola Asher Tzom Yisrael, Yisrael here is not talking about Israel, their forefathers, talking about Israel, the Jewish people. So how can he say that midrashically it was Yaakov? What does that mean?
Right, that's the next question. What does it mean that Yaakov saw the event?
And thus he was not dead? He never died? Even that was Rav Nachman's response to Rav Yitzchak. He said, "What are you talking about? Was he not eulogized, embalmed, and buried?" So he says, "No, I'm derushing. I'm giving a midrashic answer." So he's not. So the first point is, you just see from the dialogue, he's not denying the world of Pshat. He's saying midrashically. Based on the Pshat, Yaakov was dead and buried. Midrashically, Yisrael lives.
Right.
How come they were only talking about Yaakov?
Because he was Yisrael. We both were called Yisrael.
Yeah, but if you're saying Yaakov's not dead, well, why not Avram and Yitzchak?
Right.
If you're going midrashically, go whole hog.
Right.
Bring back everybody.
Right.
We're having an Avos party. Okay, bring them all back.
It's true, we don't understand what it means that Yaakov saw the event. But to the extent that he did, so to speak, see the event, who cares?
Right.
Like, who cares?
Okay, so let's say he's in the crowd.
No, so now he knows. So who cares?
Right. How does it help anything?
Did he actually see it?
It depends how you explain this.
So, midrashically, he's saying... Okay, so the first thing you have to know is that the pshat level, the literal text, deals with a world of sense perception and historical reality. Okay, so Yaakov was not, so based on the pshat, Yaakov was not there at the Yom Suf. He was not there to witness their redemption, the Geula. Midrashically, which we have to, but on a non, we have to understand on a non-physical level, in some way, which has to be explained, Yaakov was present. And not only was he present, he was the only one present. But Yisrael, who saw? Yisrael saw. Yisrael Sava. Yisrael the Zaidi. So that needs to be, what is he? I mean, and the key thing is Rav Nachman is telling you, I'm giving you a drash here. But he's not giving you a little... But don't make the mistake. The midrash means now I'm going to tell you a little folk story. I'm going to give you a little legend. That's not either. I'm not here to titillate you and to entertain you with some made up story. He's trying to convey a concept, which a midrash means is a constructed story, which would be missed on a person looking at things superficially. It's a literary device designed, constructed to be able to catch a deeper concept. Okay, that's what a midrash is. Or in this case, a Nagadata. Okay, which is all a midrash is a Nagadata is a midrash told within the Gemara. This is a Nagadata. Okay, but it's the same basic idea.
But just to reiterate, we were saying that Yaakov, the Jewish people are the seed of Yaakov because of Yisrael.
Well, they are called B'nai Yisrael.
Right, so that's where it comes from.
Yeah, because, well, the Pasuk, he quotes the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, he says that do not fear my servant Yaakov. Now, the plain reading of that thing is not talking about Yaakov Avinu. The plain talking about Yaakov, the Jewish people. We're called in there in his name. So we're called, oh, Jacob. We're called Yaakov. Or don't be afraid, Yisrael. Now, because behold, I will redeem you from a far away, and your children from a land, from a far away land, I will bring you back. So, the pasuk is kind of, it seems that he's talking to Yaakov himself, because he's talking about your children will be brought back. So he's talking about you and your children. Okay, so the pasuk allows room to be read that way, that Hashem is actually literally talking to Yaakov. And don't worry about Yaakov is now dead, but don't worry, you and your children will be redeemed. So then he says, just as Yaakov is, just as the children are alive, he's also alive. And then Rashi comments and says, well, what was the example? What was the redemptive moment? Redemptive moment was Yom Tov. That was the redemptive moment. And that was where Yaakov was. That's an exemplification of Yaakov being alive. So let's see how you can figure out the Midrashic puzzle, which will give us a deeper insight into the realm, into the idea of Hashgacha, which is really why I was bringing this to your attention. And Laura, I think your question is a good one. What is it about Yaakov more than if you're going to bring people back from the proverbial bench? Okay, why are you bringing Yaakov back? Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Why not Yitzchak Avinu lo meis? Why not Avraham Avinu lo meis? All right? What's so significant about Yaakov that would be appropriate here? I want to add to that. He says. Rashi says what, which I didn't write on that sheet there. He says Nachman says he's going to give a drasha. He says. Rashi says, "Hai dechantu chantaya." Those that embalmed him, sovrim hayu shemes. They maintain that he died. Now the reality is, they did remove his bodily fluids. They did inject the formaldehyde, and they did preserve his body. Yaakov Avinu. Yeah. Well, it's open in the Pesukim. But the key thing is that I think the way the Rashi says, "Sovrim hayu shemes," they maintained he was dead. Now you can take that on a number of. Is it that they were making a physiological assessment that Yaakov Avinu, the physical individual, is dead? Well, that of course is true. There's a far deeper concept which is lying here. Well, let's start opening the door a little bit here. If you were standing in the crowd at the Yom Tov, at the Red Sea, and you see the dead Egyptian army being washed up onto the shore? So what are your feelings? And remember that you had just been enslaved by these people. How would you feel if you're there? If you were there,
was like supernatural?
Well, that seems to be clearly that it was. That's true. What else?
Fearful.
You're now fearful? Fearful of what? Well, the thing is, you've just been miraculously saved. You were afraid of the Egyptian army crushing you and capturing you and re-enslaving you, and you just witnessed a miraculous event where they were, the sea was split, you went in, they followed, and Hashem, you know, crushed them with the collapsing of the water onto them, and then you see their corpses wash up onto the shore. The most mightiest army in the world, that was, and you had no army. So how are you going to feel?
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe. What other feelings would you think would come bubbling to the surface?
God's on your side.
Well, you're like, God, yeah, right. We are beloved. Hashem loves us. Okay, which is, you know, which is in part true.
Well, you're so special that what's happened to you.
True. Let's say, also they might get like, they could even get a little superstitious possibly. You know, like Viking warriors that saw their enemy ship, you know, break and capsize into the ocean. And they're given a tremendous victory based on no effort on their own. They might say, oh, the sea god or whatever. They might go back to their ancient, their primitive beliefs and say that, we're special because whatever. Some magical force is there. But they didn't do that. You know, Vayar Yisrael, Siyadik, Dulat, Sheretz, Asherah, Sashem, Esraim, Vayura, Hamas, Hashem, Vayaminu, Vashem, Moshe, Abdel. There was a major transformation there. And the question, the obvious question is, why now? What about the 10 plagues? That wasn't significant enough? That was nothing? Why did they have the breakthrough then? They had a breakthrough moment then. True, but why not? What about Machs Bechoros? That was not a big deal. Choshech Barad, full name. Now, what was the deal?
Well, I mean, on a superficial level, this was the demise of the Egyptian army, as opposed to just, a major setback for them. This is the end.
Right, so they could feel calm because their enemy, their enslaving enemy, will never come and get them. They are now, they've been completely liberated. In fact, as far as the four terms of Geula, Seti Vitzalti Vigalti, according to the Sforno, he says was the Yom Suf. Why were they became a redeemed personality? Because the enemy, there's no way that they're ever gonna, they're not worried that nobody's coming to get them. It's over. They're free people. So that's the one thing. But why did that result in a new appreciation of Hashem? Just say they felt good. Just says they were sameach. They rejoiced. They rejoiced. They had a party. Barbecue, some tunage. No. Did not do that. Then I was Yashir Moshe. Then Moshe sang a song. He was singing the tune. Why did anybody else sing a tune? Why was nobody else allowed to sing a tune? Or there was nobody else to sing a tune? What? I'm not saying, but it seems that then Moshe took the mic, as it were. You know what I mean? Maybe everybody else was, I'm sure they were feeling, well, it doesn't seem they were feeling,
Well, only Moshe really was capable of expressing these ideas realistically. People would just, get caught up in some emotional fervor, perhaps. But he's articulating realistic ideas.
Absolutely. What is he doing for them? What is Moshe doing for them? What is Moshe doing on their behalf? What's really the Shira? And were they capable of doing the Shira? Were they capable of doing the Az Yashir? Or why did it need? Why couldn't they craft Az Yashir? Because the key thing here, the key point is that the essence of the Yom Suf experience was not water separating, Egyptians coming in, Egyptians getting slaughtered. That's on the purely optical surface level. The main thing here was a chiddush in Hashgacha. The takeaway point is the interpretation of the event. Because to a primitive person, they'd view this as being some sort of mystical force is now rallying, to their side. So Moshe perceived what was really happening here and was able to communicate to the people what are the various ideas within the Ashkacha that is obvious and evident from this point. It was a song, but it was a song which had many ideas attached to it. Hashem milchama, Hashem shemo, michamocha b'elim Hashem, michamo nor. There were metaphysical concepts that were manifest in the Shira, in the event. So they heard him sing, because really that was he was an individual who could capture what the essence of the significance of this event was. Sure, they can dance around like a bunch of Vikings partying on the sand there, in a goofy manner. That's not really why. That was not the main point here. The point here was to really crystallize their intuition about the nature of Hashgachas Hashem versus, and here's a key point, the power, the fantasy, and the illusion of the power of man. That's a key point. The break that they had was until this point, they bought into the world is essentially run by power politics. Might makes right, and Paro is the chief, and he has to be dealt with. So the bottom line is that the people. So really, what does it mean that who saw the Mitzrim? It wasn't the Jews who were essentially enslaved in Mitzrayim. It was the principle that had been set forth from Yaakov Avinu that was finally able to come to the surface. In other words, Yaakov taught his 12 sons, and they went down to Mitzrayim. A whole host of ideas. But where were these ideas in the last 200 years? They were like tales that father would say to his son, but it was not a reality. You know what I'm saying? These ideas were essentially relegated to the side, so much so that they became essentially, as the Chazal say, Elov Odivor Zorva, Elov Odivor. They were all indistinguishable in many ways from the Mitzrim. But the moment happened there at the Yom Suf that the concept that was taught to them by Yaakov finally came to the fore about the reality of the death of, let's say, that's called the death of the power, let's say, of Esav, of the power politics, and that there's a higher principle, and that we call Hashkacha, and that really is the real factor in regards to the destiny of the Jewish people. So that allowed them to see it. So in a certain sense, Rashi's correct. Who saw it? Yaakov saw it. them as they were now embodying for the first time in 200 years the principle that Yaakov had set forth. Because that is Yaakov. The essence of Yaakov is really his concepts, not his physical makeup, his physiological being, but rather his Mesorah. So they, from that point, they saw from the perspective through the they saw for the first time through the eyes of Yaakov. They looked at it as Yaakov would have looked at it, and that's what it says that Yaakov saw, Yisrael saw. They saw the Egyptians dead on the thing, and they v'yamin v'ashem moshavda. So they, as Jews, finally stepped up to the plate and saw the reality from a Yaakov Avinu-esque manner. In that sense, Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Yaakov did not die. Because they finally became embodiments of that concept. Then it was taken further by Moshe Rabbeinu, then expanding and expanding what is the many points here that need to, what are the Hashkacha takeaway points that everybody who is a witness to it need to be brought to bear. And then that became further educationally enhanced by Miriam. She did not make a new thing. She took his same thing, and what did she add? Two things. What did she add to the whole Yom Suf experience? She gathered all the women. What did she add? Music and dance. She added another way for it to be emotionally and educationally brought forward by making these concepts into a. That's why it was. Who did it? It says Miriam HaNeviah. It had to be done with the heter of she would know the exact parameter where this can be brought in. So that's the point. So that's the. So really, the ideas of the Hashkacha have been given to us. So all for us is really a process of not of really uncovering, of allowing what's called. Allowing the Yaakov Avinu principles and perspective to come to the surface. For 200 years, he was in the background. He was a whisper. He was not present, essentially. In a certain sense, in Mitzrayim, he was dead. But at Yom Tov, he came back to life. It would be better. So that's why I go back to the embalmers. They thought he was dead. What do you mean they thought he was dead? Because they miscategorized Yaakov. They thought Yaakov was another dignitary. Oh, the father of Yosef, an important dude. Okay? No, that's not Yaakov. They understand. That's not Yaakov. The essence of Yaakov is ideational in character. And if it's an idea, it doesn't die. There's waiting there for it to be actualized by another mind who's going to come at a later date. The Jewish people. And that's the basic concept. Question?
Re-asking a question that you had posed earlier. So, why Yaakov? What about Abraham and Yitzchak?
Ah.
Who also were the progenitors of these ideas?
Excellent question. That goes back to, we have to go back a little bit into Yaakov's career. What was his major breakthrough Nevuah? Was the Nevuah of the ladder. And in this dream,
okay, so in his dream sequence, Hashem is at the top of the ladder, and the ladder goes from Shemayim back to the Aretz. And going up and down the ladder are these Malachim. They go up, and they go down. So, from the Torah, from the Mesorah, message of the Nevuah. Hashem revealed to him the reality of the, and in fact one Medrash says that how many steps were in the ladder? Four steps in the ladder. Four steps, what's up with that? One for each one of the four times the Jewish people will be in Galut, the four exiles of the Jewish people. So what Hashem revealed to Yaakov in that whole sequence was how the Jewish people are going to become the Jewish people via the whole darkness and difficulty of the exile. And the
the angel going up are referring to the various political historical forces of every empire. They rise and they fall. They rise, they dominate the Jewish people, and they fall. So Yaakov, since he was the person charged with the responsibility of taking the Jewish people from a family to a nation, he was given the prophetic insight about what will be the destiny of the Jewish people as they play out on the world stage. He was given that. Now, obviously, Yaakov, Avram was given a little bit of Yadoa by the Bris Hamatzarim, but he was given much more detail about that. He's the person who also he fought with the Esav, the angel, which is the Sarosh Esav, which is the force, the political force, if you call it, of Esav, which represents the you know, the political forces that a person that the Jews people have to encounter with as they go forth through history. So he had specific insight about how Geula occurs in the face of dominant power politics, like a Paro. He had the insight. And he shared it with his children, but they didn't believe him. Or they weren't ready to see it. They couldn't believe it. Then, when they saw that, then they saw, they had the aha moment, where they saw that the ideas that he had said and passed on were reality, and not so. That's why they did not take it as being a Viking moment of let's party because we kicked their butt. They actually had a new breakthrough, you know, as far as their hashkacha, understanding of their hashkacha, which also insofar as their appreciation of Hashem. The aminu of Hashem and Moshe Avdo, they trust, they believe, they trusted in Hashem and Moshe's servant. So there was a breakthrough there. And then thus expand, further expanded by Moshe in the Shira and by Miriam as well. So that's really, so Avram, Moshe, so that's the basic point, that Yaakov Avinu lo meis. And there are certain principles of how the up to this point, we've been talking about how the Hashkacha works qua an individual. But the essential point of the Hashkacha essentially does not really essentially relate to an individual, qua individual. It relates to an individual as he is, or as she is, a significant member of Klal Yisrael. That's a very important point. We identify ourselves as, you know, we think about Hashem as the Goel who relates to us, and as okay Avram, okay Yitzchak, okay Yaakov, always as being the being that relates to us via the Avos and via our relationship to the Avos. So the Hashkacha is mediated through that, mediated by that, and to the extent that we are embodiments of their principles. In other words, if we are sort of the hands and feet of Yaakov Avinu, then we're going to get all the divine help we need. And if we're not, we're going to get nothing. So that's an additional. This is a further chapter, you know, in our study of Hashkacha, an additional chapter of its operational on a national framework. So that's another important principle. Any questions? So now, yep.
Gary? What's the four exiles?
The first exile was. The first one was Mitzrayim. The second one was Bavel. Third one was. Third one, I think, is identified as being under the domination of the Greeks. The fourth one is the one we're currently in, Edom. I think that's the third one, is the Greeks. Yeah. So that's it. All right.